Welcome to the OnFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. This week's episode focuses on the rising investments in real estate and infrastructure made by public pension funds and sovereign funds, a group of institutions with over $21.5 trillion in assets under management, which are becoming increasingly active in global capital markets. We also look at the outlook for asset managers amid a more complex and competitive investment environment for these assets. I'm Ben Robinson, Deputy Head of Research at OnFIF, and I'm joined by Hani Kablawi, CEO of Global Asset Servicing and Chairman of EMEA at BNY Mellon. Welcome, Hani.
Thank you very much, Ben. Good to be with you.
Institutional investors have faced significant pressure from low yields and central bank quantitative easing since the crisis. For investors such as pension funds with large allocations to fixed income, this has been particularly painful. At the same time, many sovereign funds have been affected by the post-2014 oil price decline, which has affected the source of around 60% of their total assets. And on top of this, demographic trends and aging populations have lowered coverage ratios and contributed to the pressure on public investors generally. And as a result, investors have been moving into alternative assets. OnFIF and BNY Mellon have just released a report on this issue based on a survey of public pension funds and sovereign funds with around $4.6 trillion in assets under management. So Hani, how significant has this shift been and which assets have investors reallocated to?
So then I think it's important to point out that public investors' entry into the real asset segment isn't new. It has accelerated recently, but it really would have started back in the 1970s and 1980s. And there's been a number of different reasons for that entry, and then more so for the acceleration that the report points to recently, including a search for yield, return characteristics that are different from traditional financial assets, and therefore a diversification play, perhaps also income characteristics of some of these investments gives especially the public pension funds an opportunity to enhance their cash flow returns and allow them some more optionality with respect to covering shorter term liabilities. And I think more recently also a stronger understanding of the asset class and that greater familiarity that allows for public investors to have invested more significantly in the asset class. So it's really interesting. The report points to the fact that over 70% of public pension funds and sovereign funds having increased their allocation to the real asset segment over the past 3 years. And if you take a longer term perspective, between 2009 and 2017, the value of these assets within investor portfolios in this segment grew by over 120% for real estate and 165% for infrastructure. So that's a considerable increase versus increase in other asset classes, especially.
And as you said, this is a trend that has accelerated really since the financial crisis. Where have these investors reallocated these resources from in order to invest into alternative assets and this real asset segment?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a couple of things there. One is that if you look at the sub-segment, sovereigns and pensions, it hasn't, and obviously central banks being also public investors, central banks are less prone to investing in real assets than the other two. A couple of things I would say. One is that they've had more allocation of cash coming their way from governments and from sponsors over the past 10 years. And so it hasn't always, in every case, been an actual reallocation, a reduction of investment in other asset classes. But from a growth perspective, even where there has been, on an absolute basis, a growth across all asset classes, there's been more of an allocation to real assets, as you point out. And in that case, I would say a general decline in fixed income especially, but sovereign funds have been quicker to rebalance than pension funds. Pension funds still hold about 38% of their investments in fixed income. Sovereign funds have gone farther than that, and they've reduced fixed income holdings to about 25% of total holdings. And that's on a total segment, average basis.
And what accounts for the difference between these different types of funds? What different fund pressures might they be facing, or different regulatory and legal barriers that each of them faces when trying to invest in this asset segment?
Quite significant differences, actually, between sovereigns and pensions. And you pointed to a couple there in terms of legal and regulatory standing. I'd say sovereign funds, broadly speaking, are less constrained. In a number of ways, they are less constrained. For the most part, sovereign funds are gifted with a much longer time horizon for their investment profiles and less in the way of liability considerations. So when one asks a sovereign fund, what are you constrained by? It's less the liabilities and more, for example, long-term perspective on oil prices or the budgetary balance of the country in which the sovereign operates. So some of the sovereigns that we'll deal with will tell you that they have a time horizon for their investments of anywhere between 20 and up to 50 years, which is a really good place to be and probably why sovereigns were early entrants into the infrastructure and real estate in the real asset classes. Pension funds, by contrast, have more regulatory, legal, and liability-driven considerations to think through and will therefore tolerate less risk and have less of a time horizon to invest against. So those are probably some of the main differences and actually explain fully, I think, those numbers that I spoke to earlier, the fact that pensions still hold about 38% of their investments in fixed income versus 25% for sovereigns.
So there's been a big move into these markets. And as you said, that has been led by the sovereign funds rather than the public pension funds. What are the future plans for these investors regarding their allocation patterns and which assets are they focusing on in particular?
So the survey finds that up to 70% of public investors, that's the combined sovereigns and pensions, plan to increase their infrastructure investments over the next 12 to 24 months. So the planned increase in infrastructure is actually the highest figure for all asset classes. And that's significant, especially considering the fact that that comes on the heels of a period of quite significant increases in infrastructure investment to begin with. It is coming from a low base. It has accelerated and it seems to continue to accelerate as we look forward over the next 12 to 24 months. Real estate is actually the next most popular asset class, with 32% of respondents to the survey planning to increase their allocation. So for sovereign funds and pension fund universe as a whole, and this contains, as you said in the introduction, Ben, institutions with over $21 trillion in assets under management, this could amount to an additional $334 billion investment in real estate and $130 billion in additional investment in infrastructure over the next 2 years. So quite significant by our evaluation.
And so what are the characteristics that make this such an attractive investment for these funds? Why has there been this huge shift into these markets and why are they so prominent in future allocation plans? You mentioned the general characteristics of these being long-term, stable and inflation-protected returns mostly, but there are other considerations, particularly as central banks move into or rather out of the post-crisis recovery phase, and this will affect assets across all different types of markets. Is this something that is leading into this planned increase into these real assets?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think given that there are characteristics in these investments that make them more appropriate for longer-term investors, they're also quite different in terms of the return profile than other traditional financial asset classes. So the diversification potential of these investments is quite significant. The low correlation to stocks and bonds make them obviously very helpful as part of a total portfolio return profile, especially when financial markets are in flux. So they're more predictable return profiles, perhaps more income flows coming from them on a very predictable basis. And perhaps underappreciated one here is less from the return perspective and more from a strategic investment perspective. A lot of pension funds, but especially sovereign funds, are trying to invest more responsibly. And a lot of these infrastructure programs are supporting the build-out and the employment of a labor pool in the country in which they are investing. And so sometimes sovereigns and pensions, in some cases, will achieve return profiles that are helpful to their investment portfolios, more diversified, more predictable over a longer period of time, but also helping them invest more responsibly on behalf of the country.
And for sovereign funds where most of their assets do come from oil revenues, this is a particularly important consideration as they're seeking to diversify. Just coming back to your point about the returns, we've seen that over 5, 10 and 20 year horizons, yields on real estate and infrastructure have exceeded most traditional asset classes. And you mentioned that this is one of the big reasons why these funds are moving towards this area. But what factors are behind the strong performance of real assets in recent years?
A few things. If you think about where the assets are, they certainly have been driven significantly by changes in demographics, absolutely the growth of the middle classes, especially in developing markets, changing business and work patterns, e-commerce. But I'd also say if one thinks about developed markets, so certainly developing markets and demand from developing markets has driven a lot of that growth, but also in developed markets where perhaps infrastructure and real estate in many cases has needed sprucing up, redeveloping and improving of, in some cases, quite old infrastructure that needed a lot of work. And some of this stuff obviously is well covered in the press recently.
You mentioned that difference between the emerging markets and the more developed markets and the different types of infrastructure needs that they have. Where are the investment needs greatest?
I'd say both for different reasons. Then the emerging and developing markets are in many cases leapfrogging developed markets in terms of the use of technology, telecommunications, certain infrastructure capabilities that they're developing. It's coming off of a base that needs significant development. And the one thing that emerging markets, developing markets can do to enjoy the inflow coming in from sovereigns and pensions is to make sure they continue to develop their legal and regulatory infrastructure to support the inflow of both foreign direct investment and portfolio flows. In developed markets, legal and regulatory infrastructure exists, and it's more about priorities around where the development needs are and how those development needs are met from a financing perspective.
And this is one of the important points that is drawn out in the report, because despite the huge need for real asset investments and despite investors' plans to increase their allocation to these assets, there are significant challenges to them doing so. So what are the main difficulties associated with real asset investing, particularly in emerging markets where there is some of the greatest demand?
It really is going to be around legal and regulatory infrastructure supporting the inflow of funding and financing. If you think about the legal and regulatory infrastructure in developed markets and the continued increase in regulation protecting the individual investor and the pension fund, I think there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from developed markets as developing and emerging markets are looking to bring in more funding and financing. Obviously, one has to point to political stability, tax certainty, transparency, and other areas that really surround investor protection. We'll often say that the way to bring in funding and financing is to put oneself in the shoes of the investor and think about the protections that are needed for an investor to come in. Investors want to take project risk. They will take investment return risk, but risks that are ill understood, like political risk, regulatory risk, and tax risk, are not things that investors would want to take on, sometimes even if the returns are quite significant. So I think it's important actually for developing markets to take a page out of developed markets books from the perspective of mitigating some of those risks that investors don't want to take and isolating risk to the type of risk that investors do understand, investment return risk and the like.
And I think this is really the key point, because based on survey responses, lack of suitable projects was the biggest concern for institutions. And this does not just include the regulatory and the political instability background, as you were mentioning, but also the availability of projects of sufficient size and with the necessary characteristics to fulfill investor needs. And you mentioned what emerging markets can learn from the developed countries in terms of how to improve regulations. But we do also see within the developed countries, particularly the US and Europe at the moment, restrictions on foreign investment into strategic industries, including things like data or knowledge intensive industries, as well as energy and utilities, which are particularly important for the infrastructure angle to the report. And this is making the overall investment climate a little bit more difficult. And I was just wondering whether this was a significant concern and whether it can be managed.
Clearly, investors are interested in investing in programs and projects that will provide them with the diversification and return needs that would be beneficial for their investment portfolios. Having access to a broader base of infrastructure projects and real estate projects would be a very good thing. Access to strategic assets is often not available, whether in developed or developing markets. And clearly, as a financial professional, I would always encourage countries, whether in developed or developing markets, to open up more opportunities for investors to gain that access to a potentially higher return and certainly risk diversifying programs and projects.
The huge need for infrastructure and real estate investment does not necessarily match the availability of funding. So what are your thoughts on why public investors are so important to filling the funding gap?
Let's start with explaining the funding gap itself, because bank financing covers about 30% of funding needs in the US. It covers as much as 70% of funding needs in Europe. The capital markets actually take more of a front seat in the US than they do in Europe. So as banks, since the financial crisis, have taken a bit more of a backseat in terms of intermediating the more capital intensive activities, there needed to be other sources of financing stepping in to provide that capital that banks have stepped away to a certain extent from providing, and especially really long-term capital to finance infrastructure and other projects. And there's a number of reasons why banks have stepped away, primarily having to do with them needing to meet their more stringent liquidity matching requirements through Basel III and Dodd-Frank regulatory changes. So what sovereigns and public pension funds are doing is actually stepping in and laying claim to an underfunded segment that is very important to continue to finance for many reasons, economic and industrial development driven. And it's great that they have stepped in because, frankly, somebody needed to at a time when demand for longer term infrastructure type and real estate type financing is really at an all-time high.
And finally, the majority of investors that we surveyed have sought to reduce their management fee expense by increasing their internal organizational management, particularly around real assets where management fees are higher than average. However, investors are still willing to adequately compensate fund managers that deliver above target risk-adjusted returns and which offer structures that fit the investors' needs. So what are your thoughts on how asset managers are adapting to and proving their value to asset owners?
The main issue for investors regarding cost is to ensure that their managers are giving them value for the money. Those that can demonstrate the value that they add in order to justify the management fees are likely to continue to attract new business and new assets. We think as investors seek to increase their real asset investments, which are more complex in nature than traditional assets, issues like transparency over the risk exposure of the underlying assets is going to gain in importance. And clearly, end of quantitative easing makes this all the more important. We think the shift into more niche investments within real estate and infrastructure sectors also requires a greater understanding of the performance of these assets. And the need for transparency has led to new technologies and software to track investments and monitor how closely managers conform to investor demands, compliance, performance, and risk analytics type products that are provided by custodians and administrators. So asset managers that are able to track their exposures among a number of different funds in different types of asset classes and across a number of different locations really would be an attractive partner for longer term investors. So in summary, then, the combination of transparency and better data handling, data management solutions, and better technology, we think offers some fund managers a significant advantage in the space of real asset investing.
So just to summarize then, sovereign and pension funds' annual real asset investment since 2010 has far exceeded its pre-crisis peak. The regional allocation of real asset investments is becoming more diverse, and the types of assets investors are seeking has widened. These factors suggest that strong demand for real assets is a secular trend, as investors have come to view this as an important asset class and a useful portfolio addition. These trends and the way that institutions are dealing with the increased competition, complexity, and cost of these investments, as well as the implications for asset managers, are addressed in the new OMFIF BNY Mellon report available on the BNY Mellon website. Hani, thank you so much for your comments, and we hope you've enjoyed the podcast.
I certainly have, Ben. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to your audience.